Okay, good evening. Welcome back to our learning at Sha'arei. First, I want to thank everybody because I'm sure you had the same weather that I had when you were leaving the house. So a particular thank you because I looked out the window. I thought, who is going to have the zrizus to come out and learn with me on this rainy evening? So I greatly appreciate that everyone made the effort to be here. We are learning L'ilu Nishmas on the Zecher Nishmas of Miriam Frel and Miriam Baschai Mitzvah, La Sham, Mersham Shav, a continuous aliyah in the merit of our Torah learning. We are on page 172 at the bottom. We are trying to finish, or at least I am trying to finish, this chapter on the fear of Gehenna. I think we're learning a lot. I'm finding it a little bit difficult, if you want for me to be honest. I'm finding it a little bit difficult. I don't know if it's because it's something that's so far removed from us, even though we're bringing other sources and many insights. I'm finding this concept a little bit difficult, but we are going. So let's start with the bottom paragraph on page 172. Happy is the man who fears at all times. This is the true way of Yira. Since there is no man on earth who is so righteous, he does only good and does not sin. The Hebrew of that pasuk from Kohel says, Ki Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaso tov lo yachta. And each person knows his level of avodas Hashem, so everyone has to know where they are in divine service. We all know our fear does not stem solely from the selfless concern that we might not be fulfilling Torah properly. So when you talk about a gadol, that is what their fear stems from, a total selfless concern that they are maybe not fulfilling the Torah properly. That is their greatest fear. If a person really had no sins, the proper way for him would be to fear because of a concern regarding the avodas Hashem. So that I think that we all understand that there is a very great level, and that is when a person does something wrong and they just fear, did I violate Torah? Did I do the mitzvah wrong? There's a story told, and I told the ones here a number of years ago, I think, a malach in our midst of Rav Moshe Twersky, Zecher Tzaduk Kol Shevracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. If you remember, Chanoch Teller told the story over. Yeah, what was it?
I told my kid.
What was it?
Rav Twersky was standing on the street and there was a downpour and he just stood there for hours and hours.
Of his socks. It's exactly right. And he didn't know what to do. He had a lechsha, what should I do? If I walk, then it's going to be squeezing, and I'm going to be squeezing my socks. I'm squeezing out water. And Chanoch Teller writes that eventually at some point, Rav Twersky wasn't there anymore. He must have resolved the dilemma. So this is like so lamala from our level. What we do, be running as fast as we can to get into the house because it's pouring rain. But if a person really has proper yiras, so what he is really afraid of is, did I transgress the Torah? That's what they're afraid of. It's a higher level than fear of Gehenna. They're not afraid because they're afraid of punishment. They're afraid because the Torah says you must do this and you must do that, and did I do it correctly? But since a person does have sins, we also embody fear in Sion. It is due to sins. The sins generate... Okay, I don't understand the last sentence. The sins generate Yira, and Yira in the face of the sins, and their punishment is itself the rectification for these same sins. I'm not sure that I understand the last sentence. I read like three times, I'm telling you. I read it three times. Does anyone know what he's saying? The sins generate Yira. Find that, I got. Sin generates fear. The fear in the face of the sins and their punishment is itself the rectification for... Oh, so the punishment is the tikkun for the sins? In a very flowery language.
The yira and their punishment fixes the yira that you have.
Okay, so it's a little flowery, but okay, so the punishment is rectification for these sins. I'm going to quote from the Messiah Sasharim. I don't mean, ladies, I don't mean to sound like Chas V'Shalom, when I don't mean to sound Chas V'Shalom condescending, God forbid, of the Sefer. That's not what I mean, or of this teacher, the Mechaber. I'm saying when I say in the beginning of the show that I find it a little difficult, it's a whole chapter about internalizing Gehenna. It's going to end with being happy. You'll see the end of the chapter. Happy about Gehenna. And maybe I could say I'm just not on that level. I don't know. So maybe that's why I'm finally doing that. I'm not trying to say anything negative here. Personally, maybe because I'm not on such a madriga, I find it difficult. What?
All the time. That's
say it again.
The first sentence usually causes me.
Wait, I can hear you. Look at me, please.
Happy is the man who fears at all times. Happy.
Yeah. Oh, happy, right. So you're going to see the next, look at the top page 173, even though I'm going to quote from the Mesilas Yesharim, look at the next section. The subheading is accepting suffering with joy. So this is a whole section on being rejoicing and being happy with the suffering. So I'm saying, that's what I'm saying, I find it a little difficult. I don't know if it's because of I'm on a lower madriga, whatever. We're certainly learning a lot. We're bringing many sources. Remember the story we quoted about Akiva and Ukva, and we're trying to make this very real for all of us, and in some way incorporate certain aspects of this learning into our personal Avodas Hashem. Right, like Nancy just was at me today. She gave me such chizuk, and she said you were able to apply something, right? Patience. And Nancy wrote, I'm beginning to apply learning to what? Daily life, to helping me. I don't remember the WhatsApp exactly, but the point is that applying our learning to our daily lives. Isn't that what you wrote?
Well, what I said was that not really, nothing else works, and nothing else works except for the learning. And I was in a situation on Sunday where I was feeling very aggravated and annoyed, and it really wasn't, it was just one of life's annoyances. And then I was able to snap to it with the patience, and I got what I had to take care of something, and I got it accomplished.
Amazing. Nothing works except for the learning. Quote.
It's
Hashem. Okay. So this whole thing is kedai. Let's go.
The point about happy is the man who fears at all times is the next step being he fears all the time. That means that he doesn't do chait.
So therefore, he's happy. Okay.
Right. It's not because he's happy because he's walking around terrified. It's the fact that, you know, gosh, you know, lucky for me, I have that year, I have that fear, so that means that I'm not going to do it.
Okay. The Hebrew lashon of that, by the way, is Ashrei Adam Mifached Tamid. Ashrei Adam Mifached Tamid. Umak Shalibo Yipol Bara. But he who hardens his heart and does not instill that fear within himself will fall with his badness. Yes?
The last sentence seems to be saying something, the one that we didn't really quite understand. The way I'm reading it, it seems to be saying something completely different. It's saying that,
okay,
that this, by doing sins, it creates yira in us. And then it seems to be saying that the yira, and then that yira of punishment, and then that yira itself is a rectification for those sins. It's
like, but then you're saying, if you understand it that way, then you don't come to yira till you sin. That's dangerous.
Right. That's what sounds like.
We don't want that. We don't want to have sin bring me to yira. We should have yira before sin.
Before the
yira needs to prevent the sin, not vice versa.
Maybe that's why happy is a man who fears, hopefully, at all times.
Okay, let me quote Mesilas Yesharim, please. And Mesilas Yesharim says in the Hakdama, in the introduction, Ach me'atim yiyu, I'm going to read it and then translate it. A few will be min hamin hazer, sher yitbu iyun v'limud al inyane shleimus avoda. There are only a few people who spend the time to in-depth learn about these ideas of completion and divine service. Ahava, over love of God, al hayira, fear of God, dveikus, clinging to God. We had a whole section on dveikus a couple of years ago. Al kol shar chalkei chasida. So there's not enough people who spend enough time delving into the topics of love of God, fear of God, clinging to God. It's not because they don't consider these things to be important. Ki im tish alahem. Because if you would go ask these pious people, kol echad yamar shazeu ikar gadol. If you would ask somebody, how important is ahava Hashem? What would they say? It's an ikur gadol. It's so important. If you would ask someone, how important is Yiras Hashem? Dveikus Hashem, they would say it's a very big ikur. So why aren't they spending time? Vishalo yudu mechacham, shiyeh chacham be'em, eshalo yisparu, at so-called vermeila. It can't be that somebody is a wise person if this is not clear. However, ach mashalo yar bulayin alav. Why don't they spend time learning about these topics? Mipnei rov pirsu madvar, upish, ufish, they see no purpose in studying them because they think it's so obvious. It's pasha. That's what I was struggling to say. It's just pasha. They think that it's so well known. Everybody knows about Yiras Hashem. Everybody knows about Ahavas Hashem. Everybody knows about Dveikus, clinging to God. I don't need to spend time doing it. We think we know all the answers already. He says, you know who's going to be studying this? Those who aren't so smart. Because the wise people, the Chachamim, think that they know it all. So they don't need to be involved in this. You see the people who are of not such smart minds spending time with this. Until it becomes the custom in the world that when you see somebody mit chaseid, how would you translate mit chaseid? Becoming a chaseid. You expect that that he is a person who is not so smart. If you see someone becoming a chassid and becoming involved in such topics, you think there must be something wrong with them. He says, why don't people spend time in these things? Because they're so famous. Pirsum hadvarim ufi shitusam etzam. And it's just pasha. They're so obvious and they're so famous. Everyone knows about Yiras Hashem. Everyone knows about Havas Hashem. I don't need to work on this. So it comes to be that when you see someone working on it, it must be that they are dull-witted and of low capacity of intelligence. Otherwise, why would they be doing this? Otherwise, they'd be doing a difficult sugya in the Gemara. Otherwise, they'd be doing a difficult passage in the Rambam. It must be, if they're only learning about Yiras Hashem, that they're not so smart. But the whole point of the Mesillas Yesharim is, this is a mistake. Says the Mesillas Yesharim. Someone say something? Says the Mesillas Yesharim, Im lo nistakalnu, v'lo iyanu, mahi ha-yira ha-amitis. If we don't pay attention, and we don't look, what is true fear? Eich nikna osa. How will you possibly acquire if you don't even know what it means? Eich nimaleit min ha-hevel ha-olami, ha-mishakech osa milibenu. How will we escape the shtus of this world that causes us to forget about Yiras Hashem? We will forget. Even though we know we're obligated, we're going to be straight. So too with love of God. If we don't work to implant it in our heart with all of our ability, how will we find it? Where will dveikus come from? Where will yira come from if you don't work on it? Where will ahava come from if we don't work on it? Where will dveikus come from if we don't work on it? We have to contemplate the gdulaso, the greyness, the romimuso, the exaltedness of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ech titaher machshavtenu im lo nishtadel l'nakosa. How will our minds be purified if we don't strive to cleanse them? You think it's obvious? You think it's so easy in this world to have a clean mind and a pure heart and be fearful of God and love God without working on it? It's a very hard world. It's a very confusing world. I just said it this morning in my shiur in Brooklyn. Why is the world not this? But it relates to a different idea. But why is the world called olam? It's from the word ne'elam. It means hidden. Because ne'elam, hidden, olam world. We live in a world of concealment, where ruchnias and truth is hidden under so many layers. So the mechaber of the Mesillas Yesharim, Moshe Chaim Lutzado, says, how are you going to acquire it if you don't even try? How will you purify your thoughts if you don't even try to acquire it? Min hamumin, from the mum, the blemishes, shamatu b'hateva hagufani. In nature, we're gufani people, we're physical beings, and we're implanted within us these blemishes, these deficiencies. I'm skipping a little. I'm going to try and summarize this paragraph. One second. This paragraph, one second. Okay. King Shlomo says, Im tivakshene kakasa v'cha matmonim techapsena, az tavin yiras Hashem. Listen, King Shlomo says in Mishlei Perek Beis, if you seek it out like silver and like treasures, then you will understand fear of God. Remember, we learned a couple of months ago that Rav Steinman Zatzal says, what does a person value more? If you had to go seek, if someone tells you to go on a treasure hunt, but at the end of the treasure hunt, you're going to find a pot of gold and a pot of silver. Let me ask you, how hard would you work for that treasure hunt? Would you say this is only for the stupid people, the tipshim? Would you say it's only for the simple people? Or would you work really hard to find the pot of gold? You know it's there somewhere. How hard would you work? Let's be honest. We would work pretty hard. So King Shlomo says, "Im tivakshena kakesef, if you look for it like silver, v'chamatmonim techapsena, look for it like hidden treasures, az tavin yiras Hashem." What does that mean? It's hard to find it. It's hard to acquire, but you need to understand yiras Hashem. Eino omer az tavin philosophia. King Shlomo does not say, if you look for it like silver and treasures, you'll understand philosophy. Az tavin techuna, you will understand astronomy. Az tavin refuah, you'll understand medicine. Then you'll understand dinim, laws. Then you'll understand halacha. Az tavin yiras Hashem. Shalahavin hayirat tzarich levakeshosa kakesaf. Lechapesosa kamat monim. If you want to acquire Yiras Hashem, think of it like you're searching for treasures, like you're searching for silver. You'll never give up. Shlomo HaMelech doesn't say you'll find, understand philosophy and understand medicine and understand business and understand dinim. Understand Yiras Hashem. I don't know, maybe this chapter is hard for me because my Yiras Hashem is deficient. Maybe that's why. Maybe I don't have a high enough degree of Yiras Hashem, so I'm having trouble with this chapter. Trouble's the wrong word. You have to search out. How would I search for silver? How would I search for gold? I would search very hard. What did I just read? Hanimtsa zman lechol sha'ar chalke ha'yun v'le'yun hazeh lo yezman. What did he just say? The Mesillas Yesharim.
You make time for all other types of delving into topics.
You make time for all other study, but for this topic, for Yiras Hashem and Avodas Hashem, you don't make time. Lama lo yikba adam la'atzmo itim lefachos, at least establish for yourself certain times, at the very minimum. L'histakus hazeh, that's what we're trying to do here. We're striving mightily, establish a set time. If you have time for everything else, why don't you have time for this? You have time for everything else, why you have time for this? It reminded me of what Rav Shimshon Pinchas says. Rav Shimshon Pinchas says in his Torah V'kinyana, it's a very strong, powerful Musar Haska. It's interesting. Actually, one of my other classes, in a totally different venue, a couple of weeks ago, it's a newer class, someone just said, women are not mechoyev in tefillah. I said, where does that come from? Why do you say that? She said, well, she always heard that if you're busy with something else, you don't have to daven. I said, who says that's true? So this is really what the Mechaber is saying here. You know they say if you, when I say the Mechaber, I mean the Mesillas Yesharim, Moshechaim Letzato. You know they say if you need something done, ask a busy person to do it. Why? Because they're going to make the time. So Rav Shimshon Pinchas says, if we don't make time for something, it means we think it's not important. That's the bottom line. Everybody gets done what's really important to them. Somehow we manage to get done what we feel we absolutely must get done. Why? Because that's important to me, so I make time for this. Somehow it's going to fit in. One more point, says Rav Pinchas. Godless in Torah does not come from purity of heart or inherent genius. It comes from practice and constancy, and that's what we're learning. Also, that's what the Mesillas Yesharim says, and that is what we're learning in the Mechaber over and over. How do you acquire Yira? So he gives us a whole program, and you have to study it. Godless in Torah does not necessarily come from purity of heart. It's not that you're inherently a genius. It's that you have the midah of asmad, and you apply yourself. If a person wants to be great in Torah, he needs to learn. So too with tefillah. It's a big struggle, tefillah. Just to concentrate on what the words are saying. My brother once asked Rav Palm Shlita from Toronto, Rosh Hashiva Rav Palm Zatzal's son, who's I think the Rosh Kol in Toronto, how should he improve his Kavanah and Tefillah? So Rav Palm said, just understand the words. So many of the words we don't even know necessarily what we're saying. So if you had to, you know, ask something very important from a monarch in a total foreign language, in Chinese, it's going to mean nothing to you. You don't even know what you're saying. So Rav Shimshon Pinchas says, so too with tefillah. People think greatness in prayer comes from purity of heart. The truth is tefillah requires practice and training. A person needs to train himself how to pray. If we pick up a sitter when we're in a rush, we don't have time, try to daven to Hashem. That's not called getting practice in prayer. That's called rushing. Talking about Rav Moshe Tursky, Hashem Yikom Damo, Rav Moshe Tursky, there's a line in that book, Zrizus doesn't mean rushing. If you're rushing, you're probably late. Think of the times when you needed to daven in a rush. Compare the quality of that tefillah to the quality of tefillah when you have time. It's not the same. Practice takes time. If we want to learn how to daven, says he's not talking to children a cheder or 3 years old. He's talking to us. If we want to learn how to daven, freeing up time is very important. And this paragraph, this is really why I bought this to you, because we just saw in the Mesillas Yesharim, who's talking about acquiring Yiras Hashem, that the Mesillas Yesharim says people make time for everything. So why don't they make time to study Yiras Hashem? So that reminded me of Rav Shimshon Pinchas in his Torah in Kinyana. Listen to what he says next. Quote, one of the greatest tragedies in our lives is that we don't have time for Hashem. A lot of people hardly have a half an hour in the morning for Hashem. They have enough time for eating. Did anyone ever say, well, I'm, you know, well, yes, I understand some people with eating disorders could say that they don't eat a healthy, normal meals. I'm talking about normal people. You may, oh, how, let's use this one. Excuse me. Does everyone not say they don't have time to go to the facilities? Okay, let's say there are some extreme people who say, I can't eat. Everyone goes to the bathroom during the day. Don't tell me you don't have time to use the facilities, please, okay? A lot of people have hardly a half hour in the morning for Hashem. They have enough time for eating. They have enough time for sleeping. They have enough time for family. They don't have 1 hour in the day that they can dedicate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After all, as Hashem is an inseparable part, as Rav Pinkus, of a person's life, all of our happiness, all of our health, all of our family depends on Him. Sometimes I think that to myself when I'm rushing. I have to go daven. I thought, where am I rushing for? Without this tefillah, I'm going to have nothing that I'm rushing to. If I don't daven, then everything else that I think I'm rushing towards is not going to be successful. How am I going to be successful in the supermarket if I don't daven to Hashem to give us the parnasa? How am I going to be successful in whatever I'm doing if I'm not davening for this? All a person's happiness, health, family depends on Hashem. If a person cuts himself off from Hashem, he'll withdraw his hashkacha, special protection from that person. And he won't have time for anything. You understand? You think you didn't have time to daven. But if Hashem, chas Hashem, if I cut off myself off from Hashem, so mida k'shem negen mida, Hashem cuts himself off from me, so then I'm really not going to have time for anything. We all daven. But nevertheless, it's so common for people not to have time. So while we daven, we don't have time. This is why we don't know how to pray as we should. First thing we need to do is set aside time for tefillah. It shouldn't be like the last thing on the list that we have to do in the morning. And some mornings, this applies to Michal Horowitz also. I'm also talking to myself. And then some mornings, I think I'm scheduled. This happened 2 days in a row last week, and two different kids missed the bus. So I said, Hashem, I don't know, that's my half an hour. I back and forth to Farakway is the half an hour. So everything was scheduled. I know exactly what I'm going to daven. The first thing you should do is set aside time for tefillah. Give ample time. Don't be occupied with other things. Rabbi Willig, actually, in Shul, spoke about this. This past Shabbos. There's Bechukosa, and it talks about the fact that the Mikdashim, our holy places, were destroyed. So Rabbi Akiva Willig said, his brother in Beit Shemesh, listen carefully, noticed something. It used to be, not on Shabbos, during the week, but during Chazar Sashatz, everyone was talking. Now he comes to Shul, and everyone's quiet. Why?
They're on their cell phones.
That's exactly right. They're all on their phones. They're checking the sports. I'm not talking about Shabbos, but still. So now Shul's quiet during Chazar Sashatz. Why? They're on their phones. They're checking the stocks. They're checking their email. They're checking Facebook. They're checking the weather. They're checking if Mashiach came. So Rabbi Willig said, he spoke about it. It was very... Al Kavod, we need to hear. He's talking about two things. One, talking during Chazar Sashatz. It was based on, it was his premise of Joshua, it was based on the fact that it says our Mikdashechem will be destroyed. He said, maybe if we don't appreciate them, they will, Rechman al Tzom, be taken away from us. But he said, so you come to Shul, and people are on their phones today. And we don't appreciate where we are. And he said, what did I want to say? Oh, he said, perhaps we should have the great strength. He said, yes, and I mean strength to leave the phones at home. He says, there are some people who are able to come here and leave their phones at home. But he said it takes, quote, great strength. This is the world we live in. Na'alam, 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 na'alam. To the point where you see someone working on Yiras Hashem, you think they must be a stupid person. That's what the Mesillas Hashem says. Who else would bother themselves with this? We need to concentrate on tefillah, and tefillah alone. And then what Pinka says about tefillah, this is simple, a matter of having good manners towards Hashem. Today we forgot manners towards other people also. Today we're constantly talking to people looking at this. So if we don't have manners for people, we don't have manners for Hashem either. Yei mo shamayim melechem kamar basar v'dam. Rabbi Arkan, halavai. And this is the way to train oneself how to pray. Interestingly, what Pinka says, quote, for women this is all non-essential. A woman can pick up a sitter in the middle of baking challah and daven. The relationship with Hashem, which needs to be central in our lives, is the essence of tefillah. To be with Hashem always calls for practice. But when a person gets it, that's godless. When you see tefillah, when you see avodas Hashem, when you see the times you set aside, not as a tircha, but as a gift, the greatest gift, that's godless. When you have a problem, speak to Hashem. He understands even if you whisper. You don't need to speak loud. You don't need to do things, quote, that look strange to people. It's very important not to act strange and weird. And Eved Hashem is a normal person. Third quote from Rav Moshe Tversky biography tonight, actually. Someone came to the Shiva house and said to Rav Meir Shlita, Rav Meir Tversky, your brother was the greatest person I knew and the most normal person I knew. of Shimshon Pinchas says, an Eved Hashem is a normal person. Fortunate is he who trains himself to have Hashem as his partner in life. He continues, he says, people come into shul, they rush out before davening's even over, they pick up their toolbox, they run, he says, where are you running? How are you going to be successful in your trade without Hashem? Where are we all running to? I'm turning to myself and someone is also. Believe me, I am. I'm rushing through the field to what? To get the next thing? How's the next thing going to be successful? I don't take the time. Simple manners to Hashem. Okay, let's go on. Accepting suffering with joy. Okay, page 173. When a person knows such yira is proper, and that in his current state he must employ fear of punishment, he will surely rejoice greatly even when fearing punishment. So does this touch on what you were saying before, Asta? He will surely rejoice greatly when fearing punishment. Yeah, I think what Asta said makes sense. Because he will fear punishment, he won't sin, so he will rejoice. Hello? I'm asking you. Do you understand? Does that make sense? This is a profound idea. The pasuk says, "Ivdu as Hashem b'simcha v'gilu b'ra'ada," rejoice with trembling, meaning that when there is rejoicing, there should be trembling. Simply, you understand this to me, when there's rejoicing, closest friendship with Hashem, we must also be in awe of His greatness. So, Shem Shafal Hirsch, in his commentary to Tehillim, says, Shem Shafal Hirsch's Torah is beautiful. I quote a lot of my Chumash classes. There's the Hirsch Siddur with the commentary of Shem Shafal Hirsch. There's the Hirsch Tehillim. His teachings are very, very beautiful. So Shem Shafal Hirsch says on this pasuk from Tehillim, Ivdu es Hashem b'yira. I said b'simcha, I made a mistake. Ivdu es Hashem b'yira. Serve God with yira. V'gilu b'ra'ada, and rejoice with trembling. So Shem Shafal Hirsch says, B'yira, what's yira? In constant realization of his greatness, and of the supremacy of his will. The supremacy of his will over whatever contrary opinions or desires I may harbor. That's yira. To be constantly aware of his supremacy, of his greatness, and my desires are shriveled to complete inconsequence. B'gil b'rada, I don't know, Maybe it's hard for me because I'm not on a high level. The Gila Barada, what's Gila? Gila is the greatest joy. We know people name Gila. Articulate joy, the most joyous emotion. So what could it be Gilu Barada? Rejoice, the highest rejoicing with trembling, yeah? No, but what does that mean? Isn't that an oxymoron? Don't you think that would be an oxymoron? Gilu Barada, rejoice with trembling? Either you rejoice and you feel happy, or you're trembling. Is it the same? Can those two emotions coexist in a person? It is only in serene joyousness that man as a whole blossoms forth, that his energies are liberated. However, we have to attach ourselves to the great sovereign purpose of God with every achievement, great and small. We must attach ourselves to Ratzon Hashem with every achievement. Everything that I achieve, is this what Hashem wants me to achieve? Is this what Hashem wants me to say? Is this what Hashem wants me to do? Is this what Hashem wants me to feel? Even feel. The Aseres of Dibros are all action, and then you come to the last of the Dibros. O Sachmod, Eishas Re'echa, Beis Re'echa, V'docha, Marov, V'sharov, V'chol Asher L'Re'echa. Could the Torah command me how to feel? Does Halacha demand feeling? What's the answer? What's the answer? Does the Halacha demand feeling? What's V'ahavta L'Re'echa Kamocha? What is lo sikum velo sitar spenei amecha? What is lo tisna zechichol bilvavecha? What's lo tachmod beisarecha? Does the Torah demand feeling a man?
Yes.
Rav Salvechik says, on lo sachmo, do not covet. He said, just like the Torah demands halacha of action, the Torah has halacha of feeling and emotion. And the Torah expects that man should be able to subdue his negative feelings. To put God's will before my will. We must attach ourselves to the great sovereign purpose of God, says Rosh Hashanah, great or small, however small shall ever be lost, we may rejoice in it, even if it's all we can achieve in the faithful service of God. Whatever we achieve, whether big or small, brings us to faithful service of God. Perhaps rejoice with trembling is because when we become so aware of the Ribbono Shel Olam, as much as it is possible, on our level, we tremble. But that itself leads to rejoicing, knowing who we're serving. That is certainly correct. Back to the Sefer. Thank you for the water. I'm going to take some. Page 173, third paragraph. That is certainly correct. But there is also a very profound idea here. When a person fears but cannot rejoice, because of the fear, becomes disconnected from Hashem. That's what Esther said before, I think. That you can't walk around all day terrified, right? Yes, so that's what the Mechaber just said here. If you fear too much, you can't rejoice. Why? Because you become disconnected from Hashem. A person's always terrified of Hashem. If a person's always terrified of Hashem, then what happens? You feel disconnected. I told you this. Someone once said to me, and it's a person who has difficulties and whatever, a lot of difficulties. But this person said to me that sometimes they feel, who remembers what I said? Hashem is standing over them with a gun pointing, with a gun pointing at their head. So a person who can't find joy in Avodas Hashem, it's an extreme example of what the Mechaber is talking about here. When a person fears they cannot rejoice, become a fear, you become disconnected from Hashem. Nobody should have that image. The Ribbono Shel Olam standing over us with a gun, chas v'shalom, that's taking fear to an extreme, that it's so unhealthy, that I feel disconnect from God. He is like someone confronted by a large frightening dog. He becomes fearful. He's totally involved in that year.
Thank you.
Okay, he is like someone confronted by a large frightening dog who becomes fearful. He's totally involved in the yira. Just as there is a halacha, a mitzvah must be performed with the proper intent. First of all, when you bring a karban, if the karban does not have the proper intent, then it's not considered a valid karban. I know we don't have karbanas, but when a person brings a karban, it becomes pigul, it becomes invalid if you do not have the proper intent. A mitzvah without proper intent is inherently lacking. When a person says Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and is makabel ol malchus shamayim upon themselves, they have to have the kavana that you are accepting the yoke of heaven upon yourself. If you don't have the kavana that you're accepting the yoke of heaven upon yourself, and you're just saying all those words where you're thinking, because you're rushing through davening of the grocery list and the appointment and the carpool and the missed bus and the laundry, do I have time to change the loads before I leave to shear? Otherwise, how long is it going to be in the machine? And in the meantime, I'm saying Shema Yisrael, Shema Kedosh Shem Echad. So I didn't say Shema Yisrael, Shema Kedosh Shem Echad. I said the words, but there's no kavana in the mitzvah. You have to have proper intent. Otherwise, it's inherently lacking. It's like a body without a soul. So do suffering and the fear of Gehenna require proper intent. I think my biggest difficulty with this chapter is not the section on Yira, but the repeated focus on Gehenna. I'm sort of asking you a question. I'm asking what you think.
Maybe it's because Yira without Avas Hashem is just Yira Gehenna. Like, it almost is like a person without Yira Hashem is almost idolatrized.
No, he keeps reiterating that we have to make Gehenim real. We should fear Gehenim, think about Gehenim, feel like we're in Gehenim, read Gedolim stories about Gehenim. No one has any comments?
It's
yes.
That was one strategy in this chapter, was to make it real for us. So I guess
to acquire Yira, we should think about Gehenim.
To acquire Yira Sa'onesh, that type of Yira.
That what?
To acquire
Yiras
Ha'onesh.
Right, yes. That's true, you're right. To acquire Yiras Ha'onesh, think about Gehenim, okay.
Really,
yes, and if you can't think about Gehenim, think of a person's physical suffering, okay, yes.
I feel like it's, don't get upset at me for saying this. I feel like it's a very Christian attitude, that punishment, that very punitive attitude and approach to
purgatory.
Purgatory, and like you're born into sin. I just feel like, I think that's why it's so
uncomfortable. Struggling with this?
I don't say it like it's an uncomfortable topic, because I don't think we've approached Judaism from that perspective.
Okay, it's very interesting.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe.
What did she say?
On a certain level. I think the Sefer seems to be saying that we should, on a certain level, have an awareness.
Listen, Rav Steinman's granddaughter, I quote in the book a few weeks ago, the book is right here, their favorite sentences, we spoke about this maybe a month ago, what will happen upstairs? Zecher Tzadikim Levracha, the Steinmans are always saying, what will be upstairs? Their whole goal is not what will be here if I do this, but what will be upstairs if I do this. That was their favorite approach. But I do, maybe I'm wrong, maybe we're wrong, Shani, but I do hear what Shani's saying. That what?
I think this is more extreme. I think that's why we're having more.
Right.
Right. That's just an awareness that you don't live. You know that this world isn't the end of it.
Right. It's a prazdor. We got that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep going.
I was saying, like, years ago, boys in yeshiva, this is what happened, they were taught that you do these averas, you're going to pay the cost. And now Rabbi Weinberger is also talking about certain inyanim for boys and men that it's you have to know you're going to get punished for these certain behaviors.
So we definitely...
But now we don't teach, I teach in girls' school, we don't talk about ahava, only ahava. We never talk about ahava.
We're too delicate for that.
One second. We certainly need a measure of Ahavas Hashem, and we all know that this world is the prozdar. It's the antechamber to the banquet hall. And we know, do not let your Yetzirah convince you that the grave is an escape. You're created against your will, born against your will, live against your will, die against your will. We all know we're going to have the Din V'cheshbon. And we all know my life is going to be played back. And I know that, Michal, this is going to be shown back to you. And how are you going to feel? And which way are you going to go? But I am in the camp with Shani and Elisheva a little, that the repeated focus on Gehenim is a little bit difficult for me. Having said that, there was a lot of learning prior to this that was not about the fear of Gehenim. That's just, I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm just...
Maybe that's why at the end of the book.
What? We're almost at the end?
Maybe that's why it's at the end of the book.
They don't want us to give up in the beginning.
I think that, we've done this for how many years? But I think that if you really start thinking back...
One second, please, at the end. What? I can only hear one at a time. Thank you for the water.
I think he often says contradictory things. And to my mind, I think that he's kind of throwing it all out there and what works for you. And it's not that you
okay.
And this doesn't speak to us. I mean, speak to me. I don't know about anybody else. It doesn't speak to me. And so that's why it's kind of, let's try.
Okay, that's also interesting.
Remember that thing about the Shekhinah and Hashem should be your Shekhin?
Because it's very contrary to this.
Right, but your friend right next to you. Right, exactly. So
okay.
I think it's just one mahala.
Okay, good. Yes.
I just think on a simplistic level, the name of the chapter is The Ways to Acquire Fear of Punishment. If you're going to talk about the punishment,
So that goes back to what you said, that Gehenim is one way to acquire your sa'onesh.
I wonder if we just read it through a novel, we'll have Dylan now, but if we read it through, maybe it wouldn't be, we've been spending time on it, so maybe it's sitting on us. I just wonder if we have a little bit of a lighter attitude.
Okay, so let's just get through, your mother allows, Shaul Mordechai.
Exactly.
Okay, here we go. Okay, so now what we're going to do is just try a new experiment. I'm just joking. We'll just read the sentences. Okay, let's go. You must perform a mitzvah with proper intent. Yeah, but the thing is this. The chapter before this was Yira. This is the way to clarify fear of punishment. The next chapter is fear due to perfection of building of the world. So we're still on fear. Then fear requires sensitivity. So quite a bit of the end of the Sefer is on the idea of Yira. And you're right. He is using Gehenim as one of the tools to acquire that Yira. Okay. Just as there is a lacha, mitzvah should be performed with intent. Right. We said that already.
I'll just skip to chapter 20. Loving Hashem.
That's on page 202.
And then we'll finish so much faster.
What?
And then we'll finish the book so much faster.
Okay, and then we could go on to the Haftorahs.
Right.
Let's go. We also find in the words of Chazal, if one refrains from a sin, he is rewarded as if he performed a mitzvah. Yet as they say, this only applies when he resisted the temptation to sin. So in other words, a person was tempted to sin, they did not sin, they're rewarded as if they performed a mitzvah. But you have to have the intent. Excuse me. In other words, you intended to sin, you had temptation, you resist. In that case, he consciously intended to avoid the sin. Only thus is his restraint considered a mitzvah. So you were about to listen to Lashon Hara. You're this close to Lashon Hara. And you really want to hear it. And at the very last second, you say, don't tell it to me. So you actually are rewarded as if you got a mitzvah, because that took tremendous, like Rabbi Willig said. It takes, he said, strength. Could you imagine that this is what we're talking about? Today you have to be a gibor to leave your phone at home when you go to shul. Nabach on us, on all of us. This is a society. Takes tremendous restraint. If you must undergo some suffering, make an effort to rejoice in the fact that you're suffering. So I have a problem with that statement. And maybe that is the level of the Gedolim. I'm going to quote from Rav Steinman. I'm going to quote from Rav Kook, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. And they were people who, when they were ashamed, and when other people put up posters, and when they were slandered, they were very happy about it. So maybe I'm just very far from this Madriga. I could accept that suffering is from Hashem. I could accept that the Nisayon is from Hashem. I could say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I know this is from you. But it's a whole other degree to say, rejoice in the fact that you're suffering. I'm not in such a madriga. This does not only apply when there's physical suffering like illness or pain. You know, rejoicing in it means this is perfect. I'm so happy with this. I think our approach is, I know it's from you, but we daven for change. Why do we daven for change? If we were so happy with the matzah of the suffering, we wouldn't daven to Ribbono Shel Olam to change it. Why is anyone daven refa'enu and insert someone else's name? As we're saying, in a sense, we're not really happy with the situation. I know it's from you. That's not a contradiction to say, Hashem, I know you made me this exact Nisayon. You're saying, Avigai, we should be happy. You were saying your head, no.
No, I'm agreeing.
Oh.
We're saying that we know it's from Hashem. You know, we know it's from you, Hashem, but help me get out of it. What's wrong
and with
that?
And that's tefillah. That's what we daven for. The whole middle section of Shmoneh Esrei begins with Shevach, it ends with Hodah, it begins with praise, it ends with thanks. The whole middle section is Bakashos, supplication and plea, yes.
I just read 2 days ago, I think it was in Mishpacha magazine.
Talk a little louder,
in
please.
In Mishpacha magazine, one of the editors, it was a letter to the editor or something, I don't remember exactly, a girl asks her mother, if everything Hashem does for us is good for us and it's what's supposed to be happening, why do we die? This is a legitimate question. Mm. Why do we daven then?
Right.
I mean, I just accept everything that comes without daven. So she said, the mother told the daughter that every time you daven, you're a different person. It should change you. So then what Hashem is going to send you could be, we're asking for something different because we're a different person. We're not that person.
Very nice. You're not the same person,
you're
okay?
Not. That's what davening is supposed to
do. So that gezeirah was against somebody else.
Right.
Okay, it says that in Henny Machas' book, if you daven today the way you daven yesterday, then you didn't daven. What does that mean? You're supposed to be a new person. Yes.
I think we actually explored the concept. It could have been somewhere else, but I thought it was here, about thanking Hashem when, like, you know, something's not going your way or you're having some kind of difficulty or challenge, thanking Hashem for the challenge. And I think even in the Henny Machas' book, she thanked Hashem for her machla, but she said, but you could take it back now. She said, thank you,
that's
Hashem,
what I'm
thank
saying.
You, Hashem, you could take it
I
back
could say, my nishonos are from you, but I still daven for change.
But
so
she
I don't
think
know.
You did, she did, there was some element of joy.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because Esther said, let's just skip talking.
I think we should listen to Esther.
Right,
no,
I think it
really should be a footnote. Do not say this to anybody suffering.
Yes.
You know,
right. That is also 100% very important to reiterate. I want to tell you something really interesting.
First
I want to tell you something very interesting. I was just in a place. Listen, I was just in a place. This comes to a very important point, and that is validation. After I had my twins, they were full 2 months premature. I felt very guilty. Whether it's rational or not rational, I felt guilty. If I wouldn't have had them so early, they wouldn't have been in the NICU. One of them wouldn't need emergency surgery. They wouldn't have had IV in their head because all the other veins burst, feeding tubes, this. I mean, Kanaina, Baruch Hashem today. Baruch Hashem. I felt very guilty. I was guilty because I was trying to toilet train a 2-year-old. If I was at home, I was guilty I wasn't in the hospital. If I was in the hospital, I was guilty I wasn't at home. I felt so guilty. I don't care if it's rational or not rational. Anyone I told I felt guilty, instead of validating my concern and make me feel like you're suffering, you want to tell me I'm not? That's how I felt. Do not tell me don't feel that way. Do not tell me you're not suffering. Don't tell me be happy with this. It's the worst. Somebody, don't do that. Al tenachamei b'shasha meso mutalafanav. When the person tells you, that's very, very important. Don't ever, ever, ever tell anyone. You should be happy you're going through this. Right. It's the worst thing. I stopped telling people how I feel. You know why? The only ones I wanted to talk to, excuse me, when I was in the pumping room and the NICU with the other, so that moment we were with our baby, so I could talk to the other mothers, but nobody else understood what I was saying. This past Shabbos, I was somewhere, and I met this certain person. who is in a certain positive condition. But she said she feels a certain way, and I agreed with her. So she said, "You're the only person besides her, my husband, who actually agreed with me. Everyone else is telling me no, 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 no. It's not true what you're saying." She said, "Thank you. You're the first person who's actually telling me the truth." Never tell anybody when they feel they're in a certain situation. You should be really happy. You should rejoice. It's terrible advice. It's wrong. It's not the Torah way. 1 second. Let's at least finish 1 second. Then I'll take a comment. Let's just finish this. This does not only apply when there's physical suffering like illness or pain. This class was a little cathartic for me because I'm happy I brought it up because I see that I'm not alone in the camp here. Even when you are working with fear of punishment, the fear itself is unpleasant. There, too, you must rejoice in the suffering. If there's no joy, you're missing the main benefit of the suffering. I think that the main benefit of suffering is to bring us closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But do I mamish have to be happy? Maybe the Gedolim. Of course, even such suffering will cause some purification, but you will lose the main purification if you're not happy.
Why don't we just finish?
Yes, fine, let's go. If you have not accustomed yourself to rejoice with suffering, you'll find it very difficult to do so when trouble comes. So in other words, first you should always rejoice with suffering so that when your real trouble comes, you'll really be happy. The proper method is to attain a sense of joy before any suffering comes. I just want to say one thing, talking about Mishpacha. Rabbitson, Shir Smiles, I think. Is Shir Rabbitson?
No.
Had this, no? I don't know. Shir Smiles wrote this in the name of Rabbi Shmuel Brazil, okay? Sha'asali called Tsarki. It really does change the way you say Berkas HaShachar, by the way. He made for me all my needs. Tsarki can be divided into two words. Ki Tsar. Ki tsar, it's hard for me. Sha'asali ki tsar, that even when it's hard for me, Hashem, I know it's from you. So that, on our level, we must be, listen, there are some people who can't even say that. They say when they suffer, there are some people, I'm not judging anyone who's suffering, but there is an approach to suffering that if I'm suffering, there's no God. Chas v'sham. So it is a madriga to say, it's hard for me, I know it's from Hashem. That's a madriga, because there is a different level, which is, if I'm suffering, there must be no God. Speak to the Creator, Master of the world. You've given me times of expansion, of times of constriction. No wonder we're people who go after the moon. In times of expansion, you want me to serve you with a sense of your greatness, your Hashem, your Saromamus. At such times, I will rejoice. In times of constriction, you want me to serve you through fear of punishment. Ribbono Shel Olam, Master, well, just as I know you want me to serve you with awe of your greatness in times of expansion, that will give you pleasure. So it is clear to me you will be pleased with my voda of fear of punishment in times of constriction. Okay, we are going to end for the evening. You want to say something? Yes.
Yeah. That also, when a person is telling you something that bothers them or whatever, don't interrupt them mid-sentence. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Mid-sentence. Like,
yeah.
Oh,